Summer's in the air. Are you thinking about a pavlova? What's your favourite? Maybe you went for strawberries because of the scare recently. Myself, I quite like banana and passion fruit. I think the banana is a highly underrated fruit. But it might be at risk. It might be about to be wiped out. Yes, you and I not only won't be able to afford bananas, we won't be able to get them. And that will drive us bananas. Joining me now to talk about just that is Matt Reynolds. He's a staff writer at Wired UK. Matt Reynolds, welcome to Counterpoint.
Hi, Amanda. Thanks for having me.
Well, bananas, are they in real trouble?
I think they could be. So essentially what's going on is there's a disease that it kind of kicked off in Taiwan about 20 or 30 years ago and is causing quite a big problem in the plantations in Southeast Asia. It's destroying, you know, hectares and hectares worth of plantation, and it's looking like it's spreading around quite a lot of the globe. So there's a pretty big issue, right? So loads of bananas are basically dying off in their plantations.
Is this a bug that is in the soil, or it sort of, I don't know, flies around in the dust and lands on the banana tree? How does it happen?
Yeah, so it essentially lives in the soil. So it's a fungus. It's a disease called Panama disease and specific strain of that disease. And it's a fungus. It lives in the soil. And basically what it does is it kind of enters banana plants through their root. And then it kind of blocks all the tubes that take the water and the nutrients up the plants. And it kind of hollows them out from inside. So the plant eventually dies. It takes maybe, you know, a couple of months, maybe up to 6 to 9 months. The plant, you know, hollows out from the inside and kind of collapses. And this happens, you know, across an entire plantation, you know, thousands and thousands of plants. And we're just seeing it spread pretty rapidly.
Now, this disease is worrying, isn't it? Because it only affects one type of banana.
Yeah, exactly. So it affects this type of banana called the Cavendish, which would be fine, except the Cavendish banana is basically the only banana that we eat. Well, at least if you're in North America or Europe, it's basically the only banana we eat. And actually, just before we were chatting, I was just looking up in Australia, about 95% of all the bananas are grown are the Cavendish. So really, if this fungus, you know, comes to places growing this type of banana, none of these plants have a defense against it. So yeah, there's nothing you can kind of really do. This species is going to be affected.
Mm. Now, the Cavendish is named after the British aristocrat who developed it, but it's prolific around the world, unlike other bananas, the Brazilian apple banana or the Pisang Owak in Malaysia. So there are other bananas, but the one that's grown commercially and exported mostly around the world is the Cavendish, and it's the Cavendish that this new disease attacks.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the reason why, certainly in the UK, you know, bananas are really, really cheap, right? Compared to a fruit that you might get from whatever that's grown in the farm just down the road or something. And the reason is because you've got this one type of banana, it means you grow at a massive scale. And Cavendish are really reliable, right? They can go on a journey of 2 weeks across the ocean. They can be bumped around and all that stuff. So that's why Cavendish has become the centre of the banana industry. Like you said, there's loads of different alternatives, but we don't use them because it's not very cost effective to grow them at scale. Now, the big problem facing the industry is like our favourite banana, basically the only banana that anyone eats, at least export wise, has this real big problem. So what do we do? Do we find a different banana? Do we fix this banana? You know, do we try and stop this disease coming? Yeah, no one quite knows.
Well, as it turns out, there's a great Australian connection here, isn't there? Because the race is on to find out how to save the Cavendish, if you like. And in a small town called Humpty Doo in the Northern Territory, we might be setting the path to saving the Cavendish. Isn't that true?
Yeah, that's right. It's actually super interesting because really there's only one place in the world that a Cavendish banana that is resistant to this disease, this strain of disease I was talking about, is growing, and that's in Humpty Doo, this place in the Northern Territory. And the way this banana has been created is by basically taking resistance genes from another banana, because loads of bananas actually in the wild are naturally resistant to this disease. So if you pick one of those other bananas you mentioned, they're probably fine and they probably won't be affected by this disease. And what this scientist has done, a guy called James Dale, he's taken this gene from these other bananas, put it in the Cavendish banana and started growing them. And he's seen, you know, when it's been presented with this disease in this infected soil, that actually it's infected nowhere near as much. So it is possible to genetically modify Cavendish bananas so they are resistant to this fungus.
Mm. Yeah, apparently this James Dale, he's a professor of Queensland University of Technology in Brisbane, isolated a gene out of another banana, a wild banana. And now it's history because it's growing really well and has survived and thrived, in fact, in Humpty Doo, but he's not allowed to eat it.
Exactly. This is a brilliant thing. And it's kind of funny speaking to James because he's growing these amazing bananas, right? They've, in a way, cured this problem, exactly what we're talking about. But he doesn't get to eat them. What he has to do, he has to, you know, throw them away, and they use them for fertilizer, actually, eventually. And the reason is because those bananas are technically classified as GMOs, so genetically modified organisms, because they're taking genetic material from a different plant in this respect, you know, a different type of banana. It's still a banana, but it's a different banana. And inserting it into a new plant, that's classified as this kind of hybrid creation. And basically, there's not many places where that's accepted. You know, in America, you might get some GMO crops that are grown in that way, but certainly in Europe, they're very, very unpopular and they're very, very tightly regulated because essentially, you know, all those GMO scares and stuff, people don't want to eat them when they're created in that way.
But you can do it another way, can't you? And then you can sell it.
Yeah, exactly. So now what's really interesting is we're just seeing this kind of emergence of a technology that, you know, is founded around kind of 2012 or so, and it's called CRISPR, which is essentially a really precise way of editing the genes of any organism, but in this case, a banana. So rather than taking DNA from a different banana, what you can do is have these, you know, tiny molecules that go in and say, actually, we're just going to edit the DNA of this banana we've already got, take away these tiny bits, and by taking that away, we can try and make it resistant. So amazingly, James Dale has not only solved, you know, the Cavendish problem once, he's found the solution, grown it, it works, great, can't eat it, and now he's doing it again. So he's having to redo the solution in a way that would be palatable to people and that, you know, you and I might actually buy in the shops. And it looks like it's going all right.
Now, I'm not asking you to disparage Professor Dale's character. Do you really believe no one's had a bite?
This is the thing that I asked him. And, you know, James, he really likes bananas, right? He's tried, you know, all the ones you're talking about and more. He's tried them. And I think he grows them. I don't know, maybe. He says that he's definitely not tried them. You know what? He seems a pretty trustworthy guy. So who am I to judge?
Yeah. I'm talking with Matt Reynolds, staff writer for Wired UK. And we're talking about bananas. And it might drive you bananas to know that we might run out of bananas. Now, we've heard about Humpty Doo. What's happening in Uganda?
Yeah, so in Uganda and other places in Africa as well, actually, you know, for us, it's great having bananas for dessert or in the morning or whatever. But in certain places, bananas make up about 25% of the daily calorie intake, you know, bananas and plantains and all that stuff. And so actually what James is doing in Uganda is creating vitamin A-enriched bananas. And they're growing, they've got this, kind of like this weird golden colour. Yeah, he's basically growing these enriched bananas, thinking, well, you know, if it makes up so much of people's diets anyway, why not use bananas as a really good way of getting vitamin A in them? And actually, he's using exactly the same technology. And I think that it's a bit of a race. You know, are we going to see these disease-resistant bananas in Australia or these vitamin A-enriched bananas in Uganda? Which are going to be the first CRISPR-registered bananas that come to the market? We're probably looking maybe in, you know, 2020, 2021. So, it's, you know, it's happening really quickly.
We don't import bananas into Australia, we grow them here, but bananas are exported all over the world. Do you think James's insights will save the Cavendish internationally?
You know, it's so hard to know. So here in Europe, it was looking like that might be the case, right, and that we might be accepting of CRISPR-edited bananas. But then a few months ago, actually in late June, there was a ruling by the European Union that said, actually, CRISPR-edited crops, they're going to be regulated in the same way that GMO crops, you know, are regulated. So they're going to be very tight restrictions on how they're sold and grown. So at the minute, it really looks like the rest of the world is not very accepting of these, which is a massive problem, right? Because banana companies don't want to switch to a new type of banana if they can't guarantee that people are going to buy it. So at the minute, there's this real uncertainty. Is this disease going to come and force this decision, or are they going to, you know, get there before? You know, we're not sure of it. You might have bananas, but we might not in the future. Who knows?
It's a serious problem because while they work this out, Cavendish crops are dying all over the world.
Oh, yeah, completely. I mean, this disease, it started in Taiwan and then it's moved, you know, all through southern China, through Vietnam, and then, yeah, it's in Northern Territory in Australia, it's jumped to Israel, and it's in Madagascar. So you can already see it's coming partly around the world, and the big, big export countries as far as, you know, Europe and the USA are concerned, places like Ecuador and Latin America, and some of the people I spoke to think that maybe this disease is already in the soil there and we just don't know about it. So it seems like it's probably only a matter of time.
But these bananas are infertile, so there's not quite the same risk, is there, of a GM crop spreading and infecting other crops and mutating?
Yeah, exactly. So that's one of those big fears that people had around GM crops, is that what happens if a certain crop breeds with another crop in the wild, and then you've got this edited DNA that kind of ends up in an unregulated environment. But the great thing about bananas is that they can't reproduce sexually, right? So they're just clones of each other. And actually, that's the bad thing as well, because that's why they're all vulnerable to this disease, because they're all genetically identical. So, you know, something that affects one banana is going to affect every single other banana in the world, basically. But from a safety perspective, from a GM perspective, that's brilliant, because, you know, these crops can blow anywhere, they can be in any field, they can interact with any insects, and, you know, that genetic material doesn't go anywhere. So they're actually, relatively speaking, like, incredibly safe, although people are obviously very cautious around all these things anyway.
I have to say, Matt Reynolds, staff writer from Wired in the UK, you're a fascinating guy. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.